Friendship, a story. If I had to pick the top three things I love about each of my friends, here's what they would be. Allie. Number one. Spent all of sophomore year collecting miniature porcelain cows and reading obscure facts about them online after one of them, a real one I mean, wrapped its tongue around her wrist while she was on vacation in Vermont. Number two. Cooks without recipes and is totally going to have her own cooking show someday and has promised we can all come on and be guests. Number three. Sticks her tongue out all the way when she yawns, like a cat. Elodie, number one. Has perfect pitch and the clearest, richest voice you can imagine, like maple syrup pouring over warm pancakes, but doesn't ever show off and only sings on her own when she's in the shower. Number two. Once went a whole school year wearing at least one green item of clothing every single day. Number three. Snorts when she laughs, which always makes me laugh. Lindsay. Number one. Will always dance, even when nobody else is, even when there's no music. In the cafeteria, in the bathroom, in the mall food court. Number two. Toilet papered Todd Horton's house every single day for a week after he told everyone that Elodie was a bad kisser. Number three. Once broke into a full-on sprint when we were cutting across the park, pumping her arms and legs and zooming across the fields in her jeans and Chinese laundry boots. I started running too, but couldn't catch up to her before we were both doubled over, huffing out the cold autumn air, my lungs feeling like they were going to explode. And when I laughed and said, "You win," she gave me the strangest look over her shoulder. Not mean, just like she couldn't believe I was there. Then straightened up and said, "I wasn't racing you." I think I understand that now. I'm thinking about all these things at Allie's house, feeling like I haven't said them enough or at all, feeling like we've spent too much time making fun of one another or bullshitting about things that don't matter or wishing things and people were different, better, more interesting, cuter, older. But it's hard to find a way to say it now, so instead I just laugh along while Lindsay and Elodie shimmy around the kitchen and Allie frantically tries to salvage something edible from two-day-old Italian pesto and some old packaged crackers. And when Lindsay throws her arms around my shoulders and then Allie's, and then Elodie scoots around to Allie's other side, and Lindsay says, "I love you bitches to death. You know that, right?" And Elodie yells, "Group hug." I just barrel in there and put my arms around them and squeeze until Elodie breaks away laughing and says, "If I laugh any harder, I'm gonna throw up." The secret. I just don't get it. Lindsay's pouting in the front seat, halfway down Kent's driveway, where the line of cars ends. "How do you expect us to get home?" I sigh and explain it for the thousandth time. "I'll get us a ride, okay?" "Why don't you just come in with us now?" Allie whines from the back seat, also for the thousandth time. "Just leave the damn car. And let you drive home, Miss Absolute World?" I twist around and stare pointedly at the vodka bottle she's holding. She takes this as a cue to toss back another gulp. "I'll drive us home," Lindsay insists. "Have you ever seen me drunk?" "It doesn't matter," I roll my eyes. "You can't even drive sober." Elodie snorts and Lindsay wags a finger at her.
"Watch out or you'll be walking to school from now on," she says.
"Come on, we're missing the party." Allie finger combs her hair, ducking so she can check herself out in the rearview mirror. "Give me 15 minutes tops," I say. "I'll be back before you even make it to the keg."
"How will you get back here?"
Lindsay's still eyeing me suspiciously, but she opens the door. "Don't worry about it," I say. "I hooked up a ride earlier."
"I still don't see why you can't just drive us home later." Lindsay's grumbling, still unhappy about the arrangements, but she climbs out and Allie and Elodie follow. I don't bother answering. I've already explained and explained again that I may be ducking out of the party early. I know all of them assume it's because Rob will be there and I'm afraid I'll freak or something, and I don't correct them. I'm planning to drop the car in Lindsay's driveway, but after I pull out onto Route 9, I find that, without meaning to, I steer toward home. I'm feeling calm, blank, like all of the darkness outside has somehow seeped in and turned everything off inside me. It's not an unpleasant feeling. It's kind of like being in a pool and kicking up onto your back until you find the perfect balance where you can float without thinking about it. Most of the lights are off at my house. Izzy's gone to sleep several hours ago. There's a faint blue light glowing in the den. My father must be watching TV. Upstairs, a bright square of light marks the bathroom. Through the shades, I can see a figure moving around, and I imagine my mom dotting Clinique moisturizer on her face, squinting without her contacts, the tattered arm of her bathrobe fluttering, a bird wing. As usual, they've left the porch light on for me so that when I come home, I won't have to fumble in my bag for my keys. They'll be making plans for tomorrow, maybe wondering what to do for breakfast or whether to wake me up before noon, and for a moment, grief for everything I'm losing, have lost already. Lost days ago in a split second of skidding and tearing where my life, ripped away from its axis, overwhelms me. And I put my head down on the steering wheel and wait for the feeling to pass. It does. The pain ebbs away, my muscles relax, and once again, I'm struck by the rightness of things. As I'm driving back to Lindsay's, I think about something I learned years ago in science class, that even when birds have been separated from their flock, they will still migrate instinctively. They know where to go without ever having been shown the way. Everyone was talking about how amazing that was, but now it doesn't seem so strange. That's how I feel right now, as though I am in the air, all alone, but somehow I know exactly what to do. A few miles before Lindsay's driveway, I pull out my phone and punch in Kent's number. It occurs to me that he may have thought I was kidding earlier today. Maybe he won't pick up when he doesn't recognize the phone number, or maybe he'll be so busy trying to keep people from puking on his parents' oriental carpets he won't hear it. I count the rings, getting more and more nervous. 1, 2, 3. On the fourth ring, there's the sound of fumbling, then Kent's voice, warm and reassuring.
Hunky heroes, rescuing distressed women, captive princesses, and girls without wheels since 1684. How can I help you?
How did you know it was me? I say. There's a surge in the music and the swelling of voices. Then I hear Kent cup his hand over the phone and yell, "Out!" A door shuts and the background noise is suddenly muffled.
"Who else would it be?"
he says, his voice sarcastic.
"Everyone else is here."
He readjusts something and his voice becomes louder. He must be pressing right up to the phone. The thought of his lips is distracting.
"So, what's up?"
"I hope your car's not blocked in," I say, "because I'm in desperate need of a ride." On the way back to Kent's, we're mostly quiet. He doesn't ask me why I was standing in the middle of Lindsay's driveway, and he doesn't press the issue of why I've chosen him to be my ride. I'm grateful for that, and happy just to sit in silence next to him, watching the rain and the dark brush strokes of the trees against the sky. As we turn into his driveway, which by this point is almost completely packed with cars, I'm trying to decide exactly what the rain dancing in the headlights looks like. Not glitter, exactly. Kent puts the car in park, but leaves the engine on.
"I still haven't forgotten that you promised me a secret, by the way."
He turns to look at me.
"Don't think you're getting off so easy."
"I wouldn't dream of it." I unbuckle my seatbelt an inch closer to him, still watching the rain out of the corner of my eye. Like dust, kind of, but only if dust were made of solid white light.
Kent folds his hands in his lap, staring at me expectantly, his mouth just curved into a smile.
So, let's hear it.
I reach across Kent and pull the keys out of the ignition, cutting the lights. In the resulting darkness, the sound of the rain seems much louder, washing all around us. Hey, Kent says softly, his voice making my heart soar again, making my whole body light.
Now I can't see you.
His face and body are all shadow, darkness on darkness. I can just make out the lines of him and, of course, feel the warmth from his skin. I lean forward, catching my chin on the roughness of his corduroy jacket, finding his ear, accidentally bumping it with my mouth. He inhales sharply and his whole body tenses. My heart is fluid, soaring. There's no longer any space between heartbeats. The secret is, I say, whispering right into his ear, that yours was the best kiss I've ever had in my life. He pulls back a little so that he can look at me, but our lips are still just inches away. I can't make out his expression in the dark, but I can tell that his eyes are searching my face again.
But I've never kissed you,
he whispers back. Around us, the rain sounds like falling glass.
Not since third grade, anyway.
I smile, but I'm not sure if he can see it. Better get started then, I say, because I don't have much time. He pauses for only a fraction of a second. Then he leans forward and presses his lips to mine, and the whole world powers off. The moon and the rain and the sky and the streets, and it's just the two of us in the dark, alive, alive, alive. I don't know how long we're kissing. It seems like hours, but somehow when he pulls away, breathing hard, both hands holding my face, the clock glowing dully on the dashboard is only inched forward a few minutes.
Wow,
he says. I can feel his chest rising and falling quickly. We're both out of breath.
What was that for?
I force myself to pull away, find the handle in the dark, and pop the door open. The cold air and the rain whooshes in, helping me think. I suck in a deep breath. For the ride and everything. Even in the dark, I can see his eyes sparkling like a cat's. I can hardly bring myself to look away. You really saved my life tonight, I say. My little joke. And then before he can stop me, and even though he calls my name, I jump out of the car and jog along the driveway toward the house. For the very last party of my life.
You made it!
Lindsay squeals when I find her in the back room. As always, the music and heat and smoke is impassable, a wall of people, perfume, and sound.
I totally thought you would flake.
I knew you'd show,
Allie says, reaching out and squeezing one of my hands. She drops her voice, which, at this volume, means she screams a little quieter.
Did you see Rob?
I think he's avoiding me, I say, which is true, thank God. Lindsay twists around, calling for Elodie.
Look who decided to grace us with her presence,
she screams, and Elodie scans our faces before registering that I haven't been at the party the whole time, and then turns to me, slipping her arm around my shoulders.
Now it's officially a party. I'll give Sam a shot.
No thanks. I wave away the bottle she offers me. I flip open my cell phone. 11:30. Actually, I think I'm going to go downstairs for a bit. Maybe outside. It's really hot up here. Lindsay and Allie exchange a glance.
You just came from outside, Lindsay says. You just got here, like 5 seconds ago.
I was looking around for you guys for a while. I know I sound lame, but I also know that I can't explain. Lindsay crosses her arms.
No way. Something is going on with you, and you're going to tell us what it is.
You've been acting weird all day.
Allie bobbles her head. Did Lindsay tell you to say that?
I ask.
Who's been acting weird?
Elodie just made her way over to us. Me, apparently, I say.
Oh, yeah, Elodie nods. Definitely.
Lindsay didn't tell me to say anything.
Allie puffs up her chest, getting offended. It's obvious. We're your best friends, Lindsay says. We know you. I press my fingers against my temples, trying to block out the throbbing sounds of the music and close my eyes. When I open them, again, Elodie, Allie, and Lindsay are all staring at me suspiciously. I'm fine, okay? I'm desperate to prevent a long conversation, or worse, a fight. Trust me, it's just been a weird week. Understatement of the year.
We're worried about you, Sam, Lindsay says. You're not acting like yourself.
Maybe that's a good thing, I say when they stare at me blankly. I sigh, leaning forward to wrestle them all into a group hug. Elodie squeals and giggles,
PDA much?
And Lindsay and Allie seem to relax too. I promise, nothing's the matter, I say, which isn't exactly true, but I figure it's the best thing to say. Best friends forever, right?
And no secrets.
Lindsay stares pointedly at me.
And no bullshit.
Elodie trumpets, which isn't part of our little routine, but whatever. She's supposed to say,
and no lies.
But I guess one works as well as the other.
Forever, Allie finishes. Until death do us part.
The last part falls on me to say, and even then. And even then. The three of them echo.
All right, enough mushy crap.
Lindsay breaks away.
I, for one, came to get drunk.
I thought you didn't get drunk, Allie says.
Figure of speech.
Allie and Lindsay start going back and forth, Allie dancing away with a vodka bottle.
If you don't get drunk, I don't see the point of drinking and wasting it.
As Elodie wanders back over to Muffin. At least the attention is off me. See you later, I say loudly to all of them in general, and Elodie glances over her shoulder at me, but she may be looking at someone else. Lindsay flaps a hand in my direction, and Allie doesn't hear me at all. It reminds me of leaving my house for the last time this morning, how in the end it's impossible to understand the finality of certain things, certain words, certain moments. As I turn away, my vision gets blurry, and I'm surprised to find that I'm crying. The tears come without any warning. I blink repeatedly until the world sharpens again, rubbing the wetness off my cheeks. I check my cell phone, 11:45. Downstairs, I stand just inside the door waiting for Juliet, which is a bit like trying to stay on your feet in the middle of a riptide. People swarm around me, but hardly anybody looks my way. Maybe they're getting a weird vibe off me, too, or they can tell I'm focused elsewhere, or maybe, and this makes me sad as soon as I think it, they can sense somehow that I'm already gone. I push the thought away. Finally, I see her slip through the front door, white sweater tied loosely around her, head stooped. Instantly, I jump forward and put a hand on her arm. She starts, staring at me, and though she must have imagined coming face to face with me tonight, the fact that I've found her and not the other way around throws her off guard. Hey, I say, can I talk to you for a minute? She opens her mouth, shuts it, then opens it again. Actually, I, kind of have somewhere to be. No, you don't. In one movement, I draw her away from the crowded entrance and toward a little recessed area in the hall. It's a little easier to hear each other here, though it's so squished we have to stand nearly pressed chest to chest. Weren't you looking for me anyway? Weren't you looking for us? How did you... She breaks off, sucks in a breath, and shakes her head. I'm not here for you. I know. I stare at her, willing her to look at me, but she doesn't. I want to tell her that I get it, that I understand, but she's examining the tiling on the floors. I know it's bigger than that.
You don't know anything, she says dully.
I know what you have planned for tonight, I say very quietly. Then she looks up. For a second, our eyes meet, and I see fear flashing there, and something else. Hope, maybe? But she quickly drops her eyes again. You can't know, she says simply. Nobody knows. I know that you have something to tell me, I say. I know that you have something you wanted to say to all of us. To me, to Lindsay, to Elodie, and Allie too. Again, she looks up, but this time she holds my gaze, eyes wide, and we stare at each other. Now I know what the look on her face is, behind the fear. Wonder. You're a bitch, she whispers. So quietly, I'm not sure I even hear the words or am just remembering them, imagining them in her voice. She says it like she is reciting the lines to an old play, some long-neglected script she can't manage to forget. I nod. I know, I say. I know I am. I know I have been. We all have been. And I'm sorry. She takes a quick step back, but there's nowhere to go, so she ends up bumping up against the wall. She flattens herself, hands braced against the plaster, breathing hard like I'm some kind of a wild animal that might attack her at any second. She's shaking her head quickly from side to side. I don't even think she knows she's doing it. Juliet. I reach out, but she shrinks an extra half inch into the wall, and I drop my hand. I'm serious. I'm trying to tell you how sorry I am. I have to go. She seems to break away from the wall with effort, like she's not sure she'll be able to stand without it. She tries to squeeze past me, but I shuffle around so we're face to face again. I'm sorry, I say.
You said that.
Now she's getting angry. I'm glad. I think it's a good sign. No, I mean, I take a deep breath, willing her to understand. This is how it's supposed to be. I have to come with you.
Please, she says, just leave me alone.
That's what I'm telling you. I can't. As we're standing there, I realize we're almost exactly the same height. We must look like the dark and light sides of an Oreo cookie, and I think how, just as easily, it could have been the other way around. She could be blocking my path. I could be trying to slip around her into the dark.
You don't.
She starts, but I don't ever hear what she's about to say. At that second, someone yells,
Sam!
From the stairs, and as I turn around to look up at Kent, Juliet darts past me. Juliet! I whip around, but not quickly enough. She's swallowed by the crowd, the gap that allowed her to break for the door closing just as quickly as it opened. A shifting Tetris pattern of bodies, and now I'm running up against backs and hands and enormous leather bags.
Sam!
Not now, Kent. I'm fighting my way toward the door, every few steps being carried backward as people drive relentlessly toward the kitchen, holding up cups that need to be refilled. When I'm almost at the door, the crowd thins and I surge forward. But then I feel a warm hand on my back, and Kent's spinning me around to face him, and despite the fact that I need to catch Juliet and the fact that we're standing in the middle of a billion people, I think about how good it would feel to dance with him. Really dance. Not just grind up on each other like people do at homecoming. Dance the way people used to, with my hands on his shoulders and his arms around my waist.
I've been looking for you.
He's out of breath and his hair is messier than usual.
Why did you run away from me before?
He looks so confused and concerned, I feel my heart somersault in my chest. I don't really have time to talk about this right now, I say as gently as possible. I'll catch up with you later, okay? It's the easiest way. It's the only way.
No.
He sounds so emphatic, I'm momentarily thrown off guard. Excuse me?
I said no.
He stands in front of me, blocking my path to the door.
I want to talk to you. I want to talk now.
I can't, I start to say, but he cuts me off.
You can't run away again.
He reaches out and places his hands gently on my shoulders, but his touch makes a current of warmth and energy zip through me.
Do you understand? You can't keep doing this.
The way he's looking at me makes me feel weak. The tears threaten to come again. I never meant to hurt you, I croak out. He releases my shoulders, pushing his hands through his hair. He looks like he wants to scream.
You act like I'm invisible for years. Then you send me this adorable little note. Then I pick you up, and you kiss me.
I think you kissed me, actually. He doesn't miss a beat.
And you completely blow me away and rip my world up and everything else, and then you go back to ignoring me.
I blew you away? I squeak out before I can stop myself. He stares at me steadily.
You blew everything away.
Listen, Kent. I look down at my palms, which are actually itching to reach out and touch him, to smooth his hair back and tuck it behind his ear. I meant everything that happened in the car. I meant to kiss you, I mean.
I thought I kissed you.
Kent's voice is even, and I can't tell if he's joking or not.
Yeah, well, I meant to kiss you back.
I try to swallow the lump in my throat. That's all I can tell you right now. I meant it. More than I've ever meant anything else in my life. I'm glad I'm staring down at my shoes because at that second the tears push out of my eyes and start running down my cheeks. I quickly wipe them away with the back of my hand, pretending to be rubbing my eyes.
What about that other thing you said in the car?
Kent doesn't sound angry, at least, though I'm too scared to look at him. His voice is softer now.
You said you didn't have much time. What did you mean?
Now that the tears have found a way out, there's no stopping them, and I keep my head bowed. One of them splatters on my shoe, leaving a mark in the shape of a star. There are things going on right now. He puts two fingers under my chin and tilts my face up toward his. And then I really do stumble. My legs just give out underneath me, and he scoops one arm behind my back to keep me upright.
What's happening, Sam?
He brushes a tear away from the corner of my eye with his thumb, his eyes searching my face, doing the thing where I feel like he's turning me inside out and looking straight into my heart.
Are you in trouble?
I shake my head, unable to speak, and he rushes on.
You can tell me. Whatever it is, you can trust me.
For a moment, I'm tempted to let myself stay this way, pressed against him, to kiss him over and over until it feels like I'm breathing through him. But then I think of Juliet in the woods. I see two blinding beams of light cutting through the darkness and the low sound of roaring like a faraway ocean, an engine jumping to life. The roaring and the lights fill my head, pushing everything else out. The fear, the regret, the sadness. And I can focus again. I'm not in trouble. It's not about me. I have to help someone. I break away from Kent gently, detaching his arm from my waist. I can't really explain. You have to trust me. I lean forward and give him a final kiss, just a peck, really, our lips hardly brushing together, but enough for me to feel that sense of soaring again, strength and power flowing through me. When I pull away, I'm expecting more argument, but instead he just stares at me for a beat longer and then whirls around and disappears toward the stairs. My stomach plummets, and for one split second, I ache for him so badly. I miss him. I feel like my whole chest has caved in. Then I think of the dark, and the lights, and the roaring, and Juliet, and before I can think of anything else, I fight the final few steps to the door and step out into the cold, where the rain is still coming down like shards of moonlight, or like steel. A Miracle of Chance and Coincidence, Part 2.
Juliet! Juliet!
I know she's gotten a fair start and won't be able to hear me, but it makes me feel better to call her name. Makes the darkness all around me not feel so close and heavy. Of course, I've forgotten the flashlight. I begin my combo shuffle run down the icy driveway, wishing I'd decided to wear sneakers instead of my favorite olive leather wedge-heeled Dolce Vita boots. At the same time, these are shoes to die for. To die in. The lights of the house have winked out behind me, swallowed by the curves of the road and the tall spikes of the trees, when I think I hear someone calling my name. For a second, I'm sure I've imagined it, or it's only the sound of the wind through the branches. I pause, hesitating, and then I hear it again.
Sam!
It sounds like Kent.
Sam! Where are you?
It is Kent. This throws me. I was pretty sure when he stalked away from me at the party that that would be the end of it. I never expected he would actually follow me. I consider turning around and going back to him, but there's no time. Besides, I've said everything I can. For a moment, standing there in the freezing cold with the air burning my lungs and the rain pouring into my collar and down my back, I close my eyes and remember being with him in the warm, dry car surrounded on all sides by pouring rain. I remember the kiss and a feeling of lifting, as though we were going to be swept away at any moment by a wave. When I hear him call my name again, it sounds closer, and I imagine him cupping my face and whispering to me, "Sam." Someone screams. I snap my eyes open, my heart surging in my chest, thinking of Juliet. But then I hear a few voices calling to one another, distant, still, a confusion of sounds. And I could swear that among them I hear Lindsay's voice. But that's ridiculous. I'm imagining things. I'm wasting time. I keep going toward the road. As I get closer, I hear the roar of vehicles, the hiss of wheels against asphalt, both sounding like waves on a beach. When I find Juliet, she's standing, drenched, her clothes clinging to her body, her arms floating loosely at her sides like the rain and the cold doesn't bother her at all. Juliet! She hears me then. She swivels her head sharply, like she's being called back to Earth from somewhere else. I start jogging toward her, hearing the low rumbling of an approaching truck going way too fast behind me. She takes a quick step backward as I pick up speed, pinwheeling my arms to keep from toppling over on the ice, her face coming alive when she sees me, full of anger and fear and that other thing. Wonder. The engine is louder now, a steady growl, and the driver leans on his horn. The noise is huge, rolling, blasting around us, filling the air with sound. Still, Juliet hasn't moved. She's just standing there. Staring at me, shaking her head a little bit like we're long-lost friends in a random airport somewhere in Europe and have just bumped into each other. It's so weird to see you here. Isn't it funny how life works? Small world. I close the last few feet between us as the truck surges past, still blasting its horn. I grab onto her shoulders and she takes a few stumbling steps backward into the woods, my momentum nearly carrying her off her feet. The sound of the horn ebbs away from us, taillights disappearing into the dark. Thank God, I say, breathing hard. My arms are shaking. What are you doing? She seems to snap into herself, trying to wrench away from me. Are you following me? I thought you were going to... I nod toward the road, and I suddenly have the urge to hug her. She's alive and solid and real under my hands. I thought I wouldn't get to you in time. She stops struggling and looks at me for a long second. There are no cars on the road, and in the pause, I hear it sharply, definitively.
Samantha Emily Kingston!
It comes from the woods to my left, and there's only one person in the world who calls me by my full name. Lindsay Edgecombe. Just then, like a chorus of birds rising up from the ground at the same time, come the other voices, crowding one another.
Sam!
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 Kent, Allie, and Elodie, all of them coming through the woods toward us.
What's going on?
Juliet looks really afraid now. I'm so confused, I loosen my grip on her shoulders and she twists away.
Why did you follow me? Why can't you leave me alone?
Juliet. I hold up my hands, a gesture of peace. I just want to talk to you.
I have nothing to say. She turns away from me and stalks back up toward the road. I follow her, feeling suddenly calm. The world around me sharpens and comes into clearer focus, and every time I hear my name bouncing through the woods, it sounds closer and closer, and I think, I'm sorry. But this is right. This is how it has to happen. How it was supposed to happen all along. You don't have to do this, Juliet, I say to her quietly. You know it's not the right way.
You don't know what I have to do, she whispers back fiercely. You don't know. You could never understand.
She's staring at the road, her shoulder blades are jutting out underneath her soaked t-shirt, and again I have the fantasy of a pair of wings unfurling behind her, lifting her away, carrying her out of danger.
Sam! Sam! Sam!
The voices are close now, and diagonal beams of light zigzag through the woods. I hear footsteps, too, and branches snapping underfoot. The road has been unusually clear of traffic, but now from both directions I make out the low growl of big engines. I close my eyes and think of flying.
I want to help you,
I say to Juliet, though I know that I can't make her understand, not like this.
Don't you get it?
She turns to me, and to my surprise, I see she's crying.
I can't be fixed. Do you understand?
I think of standing on the stairs with Kent and saying exactly the same thing. I think of his beautiful light, green eyes, and the way he said, "You don't need to be fixed." And the warmth of his hands and the softness of his lips. I think of Juliet's mask and how maybe we all feel patched and stitched together and not quite right. I am not afraid. Dimly, I have the sense of roaring in my ears and voices so close and faces white and frightened emerging from the darkness, but I can't stop staring at Juliet as she's crying, still so beautiful.
It's too late, she says.
And I say, it's never too late. In that split second, she's launched herself into the road, but she looks back, startled, recognition lighting up her eyes. Then I'm hurtling out behind her. I slam into her back and she goes shooting forward, rolling toward the opposite shoulder, just as two vans converge, about to pass each other. There's a furious high whine and someone, more than one person, screams my name and a feeling of heat all through my body and the sensation of being lifted, thrown by a huge hand, a giant's hand. The earth revolves, turns upside down and sideways, and then a fog of darkness eats up the edges of the earth, turning everything to dream. Floating images, moving in and out. Bright green eyes in a field of sun-warmed grass, a mouth saying, Sam, 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 making it sound like a song. Three faces blooming together like flowers on a single stem, names ebbing away from me, a single word, love. Red and white flashes, tree branches lit up like the vaulted ceiling of a church, and a face above mine, white. And beautiful, eyes as large as the moon. You saved me. A hand on my cheek, cool and dry. Why did you save me? Words welling up on a tide. No, the opposite. Eyes the color of a dawn sky, a crown of blonde hair so bright and white and blinding, I could swear it was a halo.